This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good evening, Burnley fans. No Name Never podcast here, and it's, as you may have noticed, it's not Natalie hosting tonight's preview show, it's Tom. We're discussing the Chelsea away game on Saturday, and I'm joined as ever by the main man, the stats guru himself, Statman Dave Roberts. Good evening, Dave. How are we today?
I'm very well, Tom. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Have you all stocked up for chocolate eggs, etc., for the big weekend ahead?
I haven't actually, no. I've not eaten any yet, and I've not got any, so I'm chocolateless for the weekend.
No, I've just got back from a holiday in Rome myself, so the amount of ice cream that I ate over there is causing me to have a bit of a rethink on the chocolate eggs.
Good idea.
Well, speaking of gifts and season of giving, hopefully we get some gifts and some giving from Chelsea at Stamford Bridge this weekend. We're going into it on what for us has been our best run of form of the season. I think two games unbeaten now. Obviously against two London opponents as well, and a win against another West London side last time out. So hopefully that's a good omen. How are you feeling about the game, Dave?
It'll be a toughie. We know that. All away games are tough in the Premier League, and you know we've actually done slightly better away from home than at home this season. Obviously we beat Brentford at home last time out, but as you say, we got the result against West Ham. Could have been better. We obviously had that two goal lead, and they came back into it second half. Hopefully, we can get our nose in front and keep the lead on Saturday. It'll be a tricky game, but I think that we need to go in there with the confidence, as you say, of that 4 points in the last two games, and try and continue that after the international break.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm hoping that the fact that we've started to pick up a little bit of form, we're playing better, we're scoring goals now as well, which is obviously a big improvement from the previous two games against Palace and Arsenal. Hopefully that, plus the news that Forest had the points deducted and that's put them kind of back into our orbit a little bit, will give us a bit of a shot in the arm as well. And with the, as you say, Chelsea, it's a tough game, but it's the way that Chelsea are at the minute, it's a winnable game, and I'm led to understand as well that our previous history at Stamford Bridge is perhaps a bit of a cause for optimism as well?
Could possibly be. Whisper it quietly, but Burnley don't have a bad away record, relatively speaking, against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. And for once, it isn't one of those times where all of those results have been so long ago that no one remembers them. 47 previous away league matches have resulted in 16 Burnley wins, 8 draws and 23 defeats, which in the context of some of the other so-called Big Six clubs is comparatively good. The goal tally stands at 57 to Burnley and 78 to Chelsea. And although our most recent visits for Premier League matches have only provided us with one win in 8 attempts, more about that match later, we've also picked up 3 draws as well as suffering 4 defeats. And although it's out of the scope of this section, in addition to our league visits to Stamford Bridge, who could forget the League Cup match from 2008? A bigger away following than usual. There were over 6,000 travelling Burnley fans down there to see us knock out Chelsea after extra time and a penalty shootout, thanks to the heroics of goalkeeper Brian Jensen.
Yeah, that was a brilliant night out, wasn't it? And it was really got the capital punishment, really, the ball rolling with that. It's a good ground for me, Stamford Bridge, actually. I am going on Saturday, and hopefully that's a good omen for us, because I've been 3 times previously. One was that League Cup game with the win on penalties. I went to a game that I suspect will be featuring soon on the One to Remember section. And I was also there the last time we played when Matty Vidra scored a late equaliser. So I'm still an unbeaten record so far at Stamford Bridge. So touch wood that continues. So that leads us nicely into the One to Remember and One to Forget section. I always think it's better to start with the bad first. So why don't you kick us off with the one to forget, Dave, please?
Yeah, we've done it that way around. Three of our four away defeats in Premier League matches have been by a 3-0 scoreline. And the first of those from the 2009-10 season showed a gulf in class between the newly promoted Clarets and their West London hosts, who were managed by Carlo Ancelotti. It was late August 2009, and the match had been selected for live coverage in the UK on ESPN. Remember them? And it was the Saturday lunchtime kickoff. Burnley's defence had somehow managed to keep it goalless until just before the interval. But as tends to happen, the deadlock was broken in the 44th minute with a goal from Nicolas Anelka. Two more Chelsea goals in the first 7 minutes of the second half from Michael Ballack and Ashley Cole put the result beyond doubt. This left us pointless on our travels once more. We'd lost early on at Stoke on the opening day. This was our second away defeat, and it was a trend that continued and Burnley fans had to get used to until we got a point against Manchester City. But it was a tough, tough season on the road that year.
Yeah, little did we know at the time, but losing 3-0 at Stamford Bridge in that year was probably one of our better away results that season, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but let's talk about happy memories. And I suspect that a lot of you will be able to guess which game we featured for our one to remember. Take it away, Dave.
For our only Premier League victory at Stamford Bridge, that came on the opening day of the 2017-18 season, former Burnley loanee Gary Cahill led out the reigning champions, who were managed by Antonio Conte and were confident against a home win against Burnley. Burnley's side managed by Sean Dyche. However, it was a first half to forget for Cahill, who was sent off for a reckless challenge on Stephen Defoe in just the 14th minute. Burnley made the numerical advantage count, starting with a hook shot from Sam Vokes. Then a flowing move was finished off with a sweet left-footed shot from Stephen Ward. And there was still time for Sam Vokes to find the net again with a header to put us in dreamland and a quite incredible 3-0 lead at half-time. Apparently, Burnley's assistant manager, Ian Wone, asked what Sean Dyche's half-time team talk would be, to which he said he hadn't got a clue because he wasn't expecting that situation. But after laughing about it, he asked the players for more of the same. However, it was far from plain sailing in the second 45. Alvaro Morata pulled a goal back in the 69th minute, and despite Chelsea being reduced to 9 men with just under 10 minutes remaining, that was following the dismissal of Cesc Fabregas, David Luiz pulled another goal back for the home side in the 88th minute. Burnley managed to hang on for a memorable victory in a match which, unsurprisingly for once, was featured first on Match of the Day later that evening.
What a fantastic day out that was. Remember that very well. I think I'm right in saying as well, the previous season that we'd been in the Premier League with Sean Dyche, we'd only won one away game all season that season when we stayed up.
We did. We won down at Crystal Palace, didn't we? Had to wait until that win at Palace, which kind of just gave us that impetus to stay up. And then obviously the following season, we went and beat Chelsea on the opening day. It's a fantastic result, hot August day and memorable result. There weren't quite as many Burnley fans there. There was, I think, about 1,400 there compared to the 6,000 who were there for the cup game. But those that were there will definitely remember that day.
Yeah, it was one of my visits there. It was the thing I remember most about that, apart from the game itself, is at full time Sean Dyche coming over and fist bumping the away end. It was very rare you ever saw any kind of emotion from him at the end of a game, but he looked absolutely delighted, just as the rest of us were. And obviously, as you say, teed us up for a fantastic season, yeah.
It certainly did.
Yeah, hopefully another one of those on Saturday would be very nice. If Chelsea could somehow get two red cards as well, that would certainly help us, I think.
Yeah, they blow hot and cold to Chelsea, so I think it's a case of trying to catch them on a bad day and us continuing the momentum, really.
Yeah, absolutely, that's very true. And with a bit more insight on Chelsea and their inconsistencies, we've got an opposition view for you. We're going to the Chelsea fancast for this, and we're going to hear from Stamford Chidge. Fantastic moniker there.
Good evening to our friends in Burnley. No, nay, never. It's Stamford Chidge from the Chelsea fancast again here. So we got you coming down to the bridge on Saturday. I must say, before we get into that, I obviously enjoyed visiting Burnley earlier in the season, where I expected it to be, I expected to get frostbite as always. And instead, you had West Indian Caribbean weather. It was unbelievable. But a great time was had by all, as always, when we go up to Burnley. It's a great place to watch football, proper football club. proper old school football club. And as I said, we always enjoy it up there. Anyway, as I said, you're down to the bridge on Saturday. What will you find at Chelsea at the moment? Well, if you believe the papers, you'll find a kind of a very toxic and divided supporter base, which I have to say, if you follow Chelsea on social media, you would absolutely agree with. The truth is rather different, of course. I mean, basically, you know, a lot of the supporters, me included, are pretty worried about what's going on with the new ownership. There's not a lot of communication about what's happening at the club, what their plans are for the future, and why we are seemingly in the pickle that we are currently in, which, of course, is 11th in the Premier League, which is not a place that we are particularly used to being in. I think really all the supporters want to know is what's going on and what the plan is. And I got, you know, a bit fed up with the fact that they don't seem to know. There's a massive rumour that the ticket prices will be going up, and we had them frozen under Roman Abramovich for a long time. So that's not going to make people happy. They seem to be, you know, looking at any way they possibly can to make money out of the supporters, and we don't really like that much as well. So I think, you know, justified and understandable, but all they have to do is talk to us and include us in what's going on, really. It's not that difficult. Of course, none of this is helped by the fact that we've been pretty average on the pitch for the last 2 years. And of course, having spent £1 billion on young, unproven, in the Premier League, certainly, but young, unproven talent, you know, people are kind of asking questions as to why they did that. Why didn't they buy, you know, some well-established Premier League players, people like, you know, James Maddison, perhaps, and the lad from Southampton who went to West Ham. There's a few others they could have bought. You know, we didn't buy a striker, which certainly hampered us at the beginning of the season when we couldn't find... I don't think we even knew where the goal was, let alone managed to score. So, yeah, you know, a lot of questions, a lot of dissatisfaction. I mean, I would actually just say, really, it's more frustration at the moment. Chelsea is a very frustrating club to support. If you actually look, you know, beyond the headlines and all the Twitter nonsense that you get, you know, we've actually not done badly recently. In fact, we've only lost 3 times at home in the league. Was it 4? You know, 2 of those early on. I mean, Forest, we should never have lost, and it was 1-0. Villa, we should never have lost, and it was 1-0. This is all down to the fact that we couldn't score. There were truly atrocious performances. One against Brentford back at the end of October, where we lost 2-0. And arguably the worst of the lot, which was a 4-2 defeat to Wolves at home in February, which wasn't that long ago. But other than that, I mean, we've remained unbeaten in the league at home. We've obviously had 2 superb cup runs, one which saw us go to the Carabao Cup final, where we kind of blew it against Liverpool in extra time, which we obviously had the hump about. And we're now in the semi-final of the FA Cup, going to Wembley again. You know, most supporters, you would have thought, would be pretty happy with all of that. So I think, you know, it's unfortunately set against the backdrop of new ownership, a terrible season last season. You know, not, you know, get, you know, the whole strategy of buying these young players has really befuddled most supporters, because we just can't understand why they would have done that. Our suspicions are it's so they can sell them for money, which again doesn't make people happy. And of course, being 11th in the league, which really doesn't help, you know. And we know that if we'd have had a decent striker, if we had a bit of experience and a bit of leadership, we would have won a lot of those games that we either lost or drew, and we would be higher up the table, certainly competing for top 4, which is where we really need to be. So there we go. So as I said, you will come down to find a very frustrated and frustrating Chelsea, no doubt. We need to win this game. Obviously, we need to win every game. I actually believe we've still got a sniff of getting into Europe through the league if we can show some consistency. And of course, the one thing you don't get when you've got young players is consistency. But if we can find some towards the end of the season, you know, we've played pretty well in a lot of matches recently, beaten teams that, you know, we might have lost against. I reckon we can still get top 7. I mean, we've got 39 points. West Ham are on 44 points. We've got 2 games in hand. So if we win those games in hand, we're above them. So it's not out of the question at all at the moment to find European football next season through the league, just about. But the other thing, of course, we're in the semi-final of the FA Cup, so we've got a chance to try and get into Europe that way. Although it has to be said, we've got Man City, which is probably the hardest draw we could have got. Man City are an excellent, superb team. capable of you know, wiping the floor with most teams in the world. So it will be a huge result if we can beat them in the semi-final. But I mean, it's a one-off game. We've beaten them in one-off games before, notably in the Champions League final a few years back. But yeah, you know, you never know. So I've not given up hope on A, getting into Europe next season, B, winning the FA Cup, why not? And of course, finishing in the top seven, which would give us a chance for league European football next season. So as for Saturday, well, you know, as I said, our home record recently has been pretty good. Obviously, we beat you quite comfortably up at Burnley, up at Turf Moor, back whenever that was. We couldn't win for Toffee at the time, certainly away. So, you know, that was quite welcome. I don't expect it to be the same on Saturday. I've got to be honest. Depends, obviously, I think, on how Burnley play. I mean, if you play an open game, which I know company likes to do, and you try and play out from the back, I think you could be in for more of the same because, you know, we seem to play a lot better against teams who leave themselves open, although we are also very, very vulnerable to the counter-attack, has been proven time and time again this season. So if he does have a go, I think there could be goals in this. If you do basically play with 11 men behind the ball, again, we seem to have a real problem playing against teams who do that. So you might be able to nick a win by a set-piece goal because we're terrible at either defending set-piece goals or scoring them, of course. So, you know, you are not without hope when it comes to coming down to the bridge. And in fact, I mean, you know, recently your track record down at the bridge has been, you know, pretty good, actually. I think you've got a few draws recently. I'm just having a look. Yeah, one all in 2021. Then I think you had that famous 3-2 win, 2-2 in 2019. So you've had a few decent-ish results down there in the not too distant past. So, you know, you're more than capable of doing it. And I think company's quite a decent manager, really. So why not? However, I think if we pick our strongest team and that they are all fit, because, of course, they're coming back from an international break, which is beyond infuriating. And as I said, I think certainly up front, we've been finding a bit of form recently. I mean, the team I would go with, obviously, we don't know about some of the injuries yet. We seem to have come back. A few players have got niggles. But I would go, if fully fit, Chilwell, Chiloba, De Zerzi and Gusto as a back four with Petrovic in goal. He's been our best goalkeeper this season. Chiloba's a good player. Chilwell has had poor form recently since he came back from the injury, but I prefer him than Cucurella. But he and Chiloba are potentially players with niggles, so they may not start. But I would start with them if they're fit. Enzo Fernandez, who, again, he's not delivered as much as we would have wanted for the money so far. I think he's a decent player. He's coming back from Argentina, so I suspect he may not play because he'll be a bit tired, bless him. So I suspect the midfield two will be Gallagher and Caicedo. This is pretty much what we started against Leicester, by the way, in the cup match the other week. I would play Mudryk as the number 10, given that Gallagher will have to play deeper with Enzo out. And I think that's actually his best position. He scored a cracking goal for Ukraine in midweek, playing in that kind of position. Palmer absolutely picks himself. He's been superb for us all season. I would have him on the right. That means I would have Sterling on the left. And Sterling got a lot of stick and has done all season. Again, he's a player that just hasn't delivered for us at all. He's not scored the number of goals. He's missed some absolute sitters. His attitude is a bit questionable. He's on a lot of money and, you know, he's supposed to be our star player and he's been anything but. So, yeah, he got some stick in the last home game against Leicester. Missed a penalty, of course, which would have sealed the game. I think he does well against Burnley. He did well against you up at Turf Moor early in the season. So I would pick him because otherwise you end up playing Palmer on the left, Madueke. It gets a bit confusing. So Sterling, Mudryk in the middle, Palmer on the right and Jackson up front. Now, again, Jackson is not a number nine. He's not a striker in that mould. I would have him really playing in the left and coming in from the left. I have a suspicion, therefore, that whoever plays in the front three, if you like, they will move about a lot. And I think that's how you get the best out of them. But that's who I would go for, given that they're all fit. And I think, you know, providing they're on their game and they take it seriously and don't make stupid mistakes, as in let goals in by Keystone Kop defending or missing sitters, then I do think we should win quite comfortably. And by that, I mean, you know, I'd like to say, I think I'm going to go 3-1. We've put four past you a lot historically. But we do have this capacity to let a stupid goal in, and we are vulnerable to set pieces. So I am going to go 3-1. And as I said, much needed, because we need to start catching up on some of the others. The one thing that worries me is, of course, with Nottingham Forest getting their points deduction, they are kind of within reach of you lot. You're only 4 points behind. So if I'm company, I'm going to get you lot very, very revved up for this match. And see it as an opportunity to get some points that will hopefully help you avoid relegation. I would love to wish you I wish you luck for staying up, absolutely, because I do like my trip to Burnley away, one of my favourite aways. But I wish you luck for that. But obviously, I don't wish you any luck for Saturday at all, because I hope we win, because we need the points too. But anyway, whatever happens, if you're coming down, have a good time, enjoy your trip down to London, and hopefully we will speak again next season. Cheers.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
There we go. Thank you very much to Stamford Chidge. And let's move on then to the referee on Saturday, always a favoured topic of ours. Who will be reffing us on Saturday, Dave, and will he be generous enough to give Chelsea two red cards?
We shall see. For the third time this season, Darren England of Doncaster, he's going to take charge of a Burnley match. The previous two occasions this season were a 5-2 home defeat. That was against Spurs last September, as well as the recent 2-2 draw at West Ham United not long ago. That was early this month. Although we failed to win either of those matches, we have won twice on the five other occasions Darren England has refereed us in previous seasons, including a 4-0 away win that was at Wolves in April 2021, behind closed doors match. He's kept his red card in his pocket. You're asking about red cards, but there haven't been any in his previous seven Burnley matches. And the yellow card count stands at 13 to Burnley players and 10 to our opponents. Helping out with the technology will be John Brooks, who's been appointed as the video assistant referee this Saturday.
Well, fingers crossed him being the ref at West Ham is a good omen. I think it was one of the few times that we got the rub of the green with the VAR decisions in that game. So hopefully that's a good sign. Fingers crossed. How are you feeling about the game? We spoke earlier, obviously we've got a bit of momentum relative for our season anyway. Are you confident that we can get something? Does it depend on what Chelsea turn up? Does it depend on what Burnley turn up?
It does. I mean, as I say, Chelsea blow hot and cold, so you hope you catch them on a bad day and we can have a decent performance. I think the fact that we can't play David Datra Fofana, obviously he's on loan from Chelsea, so the rules preclude him from playing in the game. I guess we're hoping that... perhaps Lyle Foster's going to be ready to lead the line. If not, obviously, we've got Jay Rodriguez. It's one of those where we'd like to have Fofana. He just seems to have had a little bit of... he got off to a good start. He had two sub-appearances, got two goals in his second match. Then he kind of went a few matches, he didn't score goals. And now he just seems to be picking up a little bit of momentum. And obviously, that's stopped now. You know, he obviously had the international break and he's not able to play in this match. I think he's going to be a vital player for us for the eight matches after this one. Obviously, we can't rely on him on Saturday. So we need the other players to step up and someone else to bag the goals for us.
Yeah, it's definitely a blow not having him. As you say, he just seemed to be getting into some form. The goal he scored against West Ham was brilliant then. A couple of glaring misses aside against Brentford, he took his goal really well in that game as well. I thought it was good to see Foster coming on in that Brentford game. I think it was probably a little bit out of the blue. We don't seem to communicate much about what the injury status is this season, and I wasn't expecting to see him, but perhaps the fact that he got a run out at the end of that game is a suggestion that he'll at least be able to start the game. Maybe he's not got 90 minutes in him yet, but I think he's a good replacement. I think if we were going into this without either of those two, I'd be really pessimistic, but hopefully having Foster in there is going to help. Do you think, other than Foster, it's going to be an unchanged team? Do you expect Muric to continue in goal?
I would hope so. He seemed to suit the system a lot more. I think it gave the team confidence, I think. And it gave the place a lift. I mean, it's different for away games, but I think it would be odd to drop him after bringing him in for the Brentford game. So I think certainly for, at least for this game, he'll be in the side. Obviously, James Trafford's had the call up to the full England squad. Obviously, he was just on the bench, was getting used to things there. But yeah, I think from that point of view, I think Muric will be on the starting on the team sheet on Saturday, and it's his place to lose. Now we've got two keepers who are capable. The manager's made the decision now, I think belatedly, but in a lot of fans' eyes, and brought Muric in. But I think we'll see Muric Saturday, and perhaps for another couple of games, see how it goes. But hopefully we can get momentum, getting pushing us on and suiting our system. I think we're playing the ball out a lot quicker. I think that suits us rather than at times earlier in the season. It's been a little bit slow passing out from the back, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it seemed, as you said, the team just looked a little bit more comfortable with Muric in goal. Although it's a difficult one to judge because we were playing 10 men for so long in that game. So yeah. I think it's Muric's shirt to lose for the time being. He didn't do anything wrong in the game that he got. And it'll be really interesting to see, you know, what the team plays like. As we say, an away game, a better standard of opposition probably, you'd say, than Brentford, although not as much in it as they used to be. And yeah, playing 11 men, although made reference to the two red cards again, so hopefully that does come true. But yeah, I think it'd be very interesting to see what the team looks like with Muric in goal, and whether, you know, some of the calls to bring him in have been a little bit premature. But yeah, I think relatively confident as you can be for a Chelsea away game. I think if we go there and get a point, that's just going to continue the momentum that we're picking up at the minute. I know Forest have got a winnable home game. They're playing Palace, I think, this weekend. So you'd imagine they'll pick something up there. So to keep kind of pace with them for the time being would be good. I know Luton have got a difficult run now, so any points we can pick up in the next few games is going to hopefully help to claw them back in as well. Yeah, I'd take a point there. Have you got a prediction?
I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to be reasonably confident and say a 1-1 draw.
1-1 sounds good to me. I'd like to keep my unbeaten run going at Stamford Bridge. I will say a repeat of the West Ham game away. I'll say 2-2. Hopefully, I'll have Foster 30-yarder. That would be nice as well. Great stuff. So before we wrap up, there's obviously one glaring omission from the podcast so far, and that is the famous fans feature. I suspect it was probably a bit easier to dig out some famous Chelsea fans than it has been for some of the other clubs we've played so far this season, though.
Yeah, I think Adam did the one for the last game for Brentford, didn't he? I had the short straw trying to find six Brentford fans. There are a lot more than that to choose from for Chelsea, so I've been a little bit selective. And handpicked six famous Chelsea fans for your consideration. Here they are. Former Prime Minister John Major, who celebrates his 81st birthday this Friday, is very well known for his support of Chelsea Football Club, although perhaps he didn't try and flaunt it quite as much as one of his ministers, David Mellor. Next up is singer-songwriter, musician and Madness frontman, Suggs, real name Graham Ferson. He's aged 63. As well as being a lifelong blues fan, Suggs also co-wrote and recorded their FA Cup final song, Blue Day, in 1997, with Chelsea also going on to win the cup final that season. Comedian, broadcaster and author, David Baddiel, age 59. He's been a Chelsea fan since he first went to a match at the age of 11 with his older brother. He's perhaps best known for his time presenting the Fantasy Football League programme, and also for the UK number one song from 1996, Three Lions, which regularly makes a reappearance in the charts during major football tournaments. Disc jockey and presenter Trevor Nelson, aged 60, despite being born and raised in Hackney, which is closer to both Spurs and Arsenal, he chose to ignore his dad and support Chelsea instead in the early 1970s, and has been a Blues fan ever since. After starting out at Kiss FM in the mid-1980s, he moved on to BBC Radio 1 in 1996 and stayed there until 2013. Since then, he's continued to broadcast for Radio 1 Extra and Radio 2. Food writer and TV cook, Nigella Lawson, age 64. After growing up in Chelsea and graduating from Oxford University, she went into journalism as a food writer and restaurant critic, but is most famous for her successful culinary TV shows, as well as for selling millions of cookbooks. She still lives in Chelsea, and although she's not a sporty person by her own reckoning, she says that football stirs her. And she's written about her support for the Blues and also has a rivalry with her sister, who's a Gooner. Finally, number six now, this TV presenter, Tim Lovejoy, who celebrated his 56th birthday on Thursday of this week, started following Chelsea as a teenager and never hid his passion for the Blues during more than a decade as a co-presenter of Sky TV's Soccer AM show from 1996 to 2007. Since then, he's presented Sunday morning cookery programmes for the BBC and more recently, Channel 4.
Great stuff. I think before we rate the list, I'd just like to say thanks for adding in the show notes the picture that you chose to accompany this feature was of Nigella Lawson, not David Mellor. I'm very grateful for that. Thank you very much. We're on to the score. I think Adam gave this a 7. For me, actually, the thing that I like about this list, they're not all people that I'm necessarily a big fan of, but I think they're all people who were Chelsea fans before the sort of Roman Abramovich era. So they're all what I class as perhaps more proper Chelsea fans as opposed to bandwagon jumpers. So for me, that list gets a solid 8, I think, just for that reason. I think that's a good selection you've made there. Was there a lot that you had to trim from there?
There were loads I could have choose from. Yeah, there's some of the Chelsea fan sites had dozens of celebrity fans listed. So there were lots I could have chosen from. I went for those six, but there was a lot richer pickings than there were for Adam when he did Brentford last time out.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah. What would your score? Are you allowed to score your own handiwork, Dave? I'm not sure.
You're the host. You make the rules.
Well, yeah, Natalie's not here, so while the cat's away, yeah, why not? Why don't you give us a score out of 10 as well?
I'd be between 7 and 8. I think Adam said 7, you said 8. I go 7.5. I think it's certainly well up there. It's a good, reasonable cross-section. And as you say, I think the ones they've been Chelsea fans for a long time. So, yeah, 7.5 from me.
Yeah, I think that's a good compromise, Dave. Yeah, we'll take that 7.5. Have you got a league table of you somewhere to the end of the season?
I'll go back through. I'll go back through and do a list. We could do a full retrospective at the end of the season for all the teams.
Yeah. Yeah, perhaps we could rate our own celebrity fans as well and have a league table that we don't finish in the bottom three of. That might be a nice set.
Well, we did that. Last season, we did it for the Championship. And at the end of the season, because we'd done all the other teams, we did a top 10. So we picked 10 Burnley fans and I think me and Natalie went through those last season. So I can't remember what we scored them, even if we did, but we'll go back and check that.
Yeah, that'd be a nice idea. I remember Natalie being very harsh on the Blackburn Rovers fans, but that's all I remember of the scoring. Lovely. That about wraps up the Chelsea preview then. Before we let you go, we have got one more little update, and this is coming from Adam Dennett. As you know, he's our FPL guru. We've just had an international break, so it's a good time, I think, to see how the dust settles in the FPL table, and I will let Adam talk you through it.
Hi, Clarets. Adam here with your March FPL update, starting with a rundown of the current league table, which is, if you're on YouTube, you'll be able to see it on screen now. Just run down the top three. So, and there's been a change at the top. Andy Bick in third place with 1,805 points. Jake Edwards down to second after a long stint at the top, 1,812 points, but very, very close to the top. Leading the way now is Bethan Perry with 1,816 points. So, yeah, well done, Bethan. You're the one to catch. So, also, just to mention, we've got the No Nay Never Cup starting this week. So, it'll be a knockout competition of all the No Nay Never League members. And we'll keep you up to speed as we get to the latter stages. Nearly 500 participants, so it's hard to go into it with any detail at the moment. Just the main thing for the next few weeks in FPL is how you use your remaining chips. People have all sorts of different chips left. Some will have all of them, some will have none. So I just thought I'd run through the best way to navigate dependent on your situation. Like I said, everyone will be different. So if you've got all your chips left, I think the best thing to do would be wildcard either this week or next week to set yourself up for the running. The free hit chip would probably be best used in 34 when some of the less popular teams have double game weeks, and then the bench boost in 37 when some of the more popular teams have double game weeks. I will just share my screen just to show you what I'm talking about. And we'll post this as well as the on the link if you're listening to this on the podcast version. So, as I mentioned, there are seven teams doubling in game week 34. So you've got Liverpool, Arsenal, Bournemouth, Palace, Wolves, Everton and Sheffield United. And I thought I'd just give you a rundown of what, if I were playing my wildcard this week, what players I'd pick. And you'd be able to see that a lot of them are focusing on the teams that don't have a double that week. And then you'd free hit to get those players in and your squad would then return to normal for the rest of the season. So goalkeepers, if I were on a wild card, I'd be going for Petrovic at Chelsea and Onana at Manchester United. They've got a good fixture rotation and then both double in game week 37 if you're going to be playing your bench boost. Defence, I think you'd go for Gusto at Chelsea, Adoghe at Spurs. You might fancy Porro, whichever you prefer, really. And then Bradley at Liverpool seems a really good option short term. Probably depends on how long Trent's going to be out for, but there's even rumours that he'll come back in midfield. Into the midfield, I'd have Palmer, no-brainer at that price. Son, definitely for the short term, but it allows you... Spurs actually blanking game week 34. But if you're free hitting, then that doesn't matter to you if you're wildcarding this week and still have the free hit. So I'd have Son and then Saka and Salah, two of the big hitters in the game. Salah, a must really for the next few weeks if you can get him. Brighton at home, Sheffield United at home, United away where he notoriously does well, Palace at home, and then a double game week. So, yeah, Salah is a very good captain pick in the next few weeks. And then up front, I'd go for Haaland, Isak and Darwin. Haaland doesn't double in 34. And City have a really good run of fixtures. So, again, makes sense to have him and then free hit in 34 when you might not need him and keep him for the running. Isak, I think, is a good option because... Callum Wilson's been ruled out for the rest of the season. Both great assets, but it's difficult when they're both fit because they don't get enough minutes to merit the price tag. But with just Isak fit, and as you can see, Newcastle have a really good good set of fixtures and a double game week in 37. So hopefully he can do the business. And then Darwin, always a bit of a lottery, but the same reasons as Salah. He's got the potential to go big in the next few weeks. And then on my bench, Onana, I've already mentioned because it's a good rotation with Petrovic at Chelsea. Garnacho, 4.9 million, mainstay in the United team recently. Just really good value. And then two other good value picks, Lascelles at Newcastle, where it looks to be, we'll see. But Botman's injured for the rest of the season. So at 3.9 million, makes sense to make use of the Newcastle fixtures and that price tag for when you need him. And Ait Nouri at Wolves is a defender, but he's been playing a lot further forward. They've got injury worries further forward at the moment with Neto out. And I think who else is out? There's Hwang's out as well. So they might push him further forward. And again, they've got some pretty decent fixtures between now and the end of the season. If you don't have all your chips left, if you're like me and you've just got your wild card and bench boost left, I think wild card 35 after these blank game weeks, after the double game week in 34 makes sense, just to set yourself up for the last few games and the big double game week in 37. So what I'll be doing in this situation is using free transfers to get as many double game week players in 34 into my team, and then wildcarding out of it and bringing in all the players that have double game weeks in 37. Special mention to Chelsea and Tottenham, who will have two double game weeks in the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season. So I think they are a must in most teams at the moment if you haven't already got them. If you just have a wild card left, I think I'd do the same as what I'm doing, a wild card in 35. You'd just be focusing on 11 players then for 37 rather than building a full squad for bench boost. And if you've just got the free hit left, then again, I would just free hit in 34 and just plan the season without that game week if you can. If you've got no chips left, which a few might be in that position, I think I'd just look at the bigger picture. And like I mentioned before, Chelsea and Spurs are the obvious targets. Just be aware that obviously Spurs do blank in 34, but the rest of the fixtures are very good. And maybe just look at the next 2 or 3 weeks when you're bringing your transfers in. So yeah, I think that's about it for the update. So the next deadline is Saturday, the 30th of March at 11 a.m. Definitely not p.m. And as always, wishing you all green arrows for game week 30. Up the Clarets.
There we go. I don't play FPL myself, but I always find Adam's wish that we all get green arrows oddly comforting. I don't really know what green arrows are, or I don't know why I find it comforting, but I do. So it's always nice to hear that from Adam.
It's on the league table, Tom. So if you're doing well on the league table, you've got a green arrow, you've gone up that week. And if you've gone down, you've got a red downward arrow.
Oh, okay. I thought it was maybe some sort of air show team that was trying to avoid copyright infringement. But yeah, that makes more sense. Excellent. Well, let's hope for some green arrows then in the FPL tables. Let's hope for a green arrow on the Premier League table as well. Is that possible this week? No, we're 4 points behind Leon, aren't we still? So, yeah. Who knows, with the points deductions, maybe there'll be another Premier League charge for somebody in the next week and we'll be able to rise the ranks. But at the very least, let's hope we pick up one or even three more points towards the survival battle. Now we've got these points deductions. Now we've picked up a win at last. We're back in the thick of it. So fingers crossed it's a good result. It's another good performance and the momentum continues. So all that's left is to say thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much to Dave for your insight and expertise, as always. Safe trip down to Stamford Bridge if you're going on Saturday, and I'll see you there if you are. All the best and up the Clarets.
The No Nay Never podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Our host and editor is Natalie Bromley, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Rich Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, and Adam Dennett. Our music is provided by George Gaskell, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonaynever.substack.com. Thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are proud to be associated with the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.